Hi, this is an On the Media podcast extra. I'm Brooke Gladstone, offering for your consideration a closer look at a curious candidate among a stable of curiosities currently running for president, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie. Matt Katz, reporter for our producing station WNYC and WNYC Studios' weekly Christie Tracker podcast, has reported on the governor for the last 5 years. He was the first to confront him on the notorious Bridgegate scandal, and he's now the author of a new book called American Governor Chris Christie's Bridge to Redemption. Turns out there's much more and less to the guy last seen throwing insults at the president from the stage of the GOP candidate debates.
This guy is a petulant child. That's what he is.
Just a quick warning, there's a little language in this one. Hi, Matt.
Hi there, Brooke.
Now, you called Governor Christie the most interesting person in American politics to cover. Is that interesting in the Chinese, may you live in interesting times sense of the word?
In a sense, yeah. I find him contradictory in terms of his political style, in terms of his ideology, in terms of his personality. That is compelling to me. He's almost unexpected.
But is it really unexpected? I mean, didn't he change a lot of his political positions simply because he had to appeal further right?
Sure. He has abandoned many of the principles that he had when he was trying to win in a blue state.
Like?
Pretty much most everything that's important to conservatives. He supported Planned Parenthood. He now says he never donated, but he had told newspapers back in the day that he had donated, but he was definitely pro-choice. He acknowledges that. He first ran for office to ban assault weapons. He was very much for gun control. He has now rolled back gun laws in New Jersey as he was starting to run for president. He has changed his views on immigration. He has changed his rhetoric in general about race and ethnicity.
Yeah, you point out that in his political past, he often reached out to minority communities. You wrote that as U.S. attorney, he started a program to offer leniency to minority fugitives, and he once showed up unexpectedly at a Martin Luther King event.
Right. U.S. attorneys had never shown up to this Martin Luther King luncheon. And then all of a sudden, there he was and gave this moving speech that, according to one attendee, people were crying. He demonstrated a genuine interest and concern for minority communities in this country.
You wrote that he defended a Muslim judicial appointee from the, quote, crazies, I assume that's his word, on the right. And he won 51% of the Hispanic vote.
He did. And he approved legislation that was very important to Hispanics, like allowing them to get in-state college tuition even if they came to the country as undocumented immigrants.
So that's a big contradiction. What about the contradictions in his personality? Because what most of us see is a bully.
Behind the scenes, though, he can be charming. He can be soft. He likes to say he has more than one club in the bag. So he can beat your ass in public. And then behind the scenes, you know, he's calling you on your birthday. And when I say you, I mean a...
Do you mean you?
The first phone call I got when my first child was born was actually a very sweet voicemail from the governor of New Jersey. Even though we obviously battled in terms of my coverage and back and forth at press conferences, he was very, very kind about that, actually. The softness did dissipate the longer I covered him and the more embattled he became as governor. I mean, he is able to use different clubs when he needs to for political purposes.
But does that mean he's sincere or that he's calculating?
You know, I grappled with this many times. I tried not to look in his heart because I can't. I think there are times where he is totally not sincere, and I definitely think he's calculating. But when he's calling up a legislator and wishing him a happy birthday, he has said that sometimes he calls legislators he doesn't like and goes to dinner with people he doesn't like. So in that sense, he's totally calculating. But in acknowledging that he, you know, kisses ass of legislators he doesn't like, that's pretty genuine. See, this is the contradiction.
That's that old puzzle. You know, if somebody tells you he's lying, is he lying?
Right.
Now, you write this in the first person, and you say that in some sense, in many senses, the way that he treats you is indicative of his character as a politician.
When I sat down with him for the book, I asked about Bridgegate, which is the scandal that nearly derailed his career. And the more questions I asked, the more hostile the room got.
The room? Who else was in the room?
His communications director. There were three of us in a sparse office in Newark that the state of New Jersey keeps for the governor.
A single light bulb over your head?
There were no windows. It felt that way. It was a it was an increasingly hostile experience the more questions I asked. I had known beforehand that he wasn't going to really answer any of my questions related to the scandal. And I got further and further, and he would say, skip. He would say, I'm not answering that. And finally, he said, I ought to fucking kick you out of this room right now, but I'm not going to. And I was intimidated. I mean, I didn't let it affect me as a questioner or as a journalist, but, you know, my heart was racing. He leaned his head down and he was staring at me and he wasn't blinking. And he was pushing me over the ledge and then giving me a hand and pulling me back up. Like, I can save your ass or I can, you know, destroy you. To me, it felt like this must be how he deals in these smoky back rooms with conflict when he needs to.
What did you cover before you covered Christie?
Right before I was in Afghanistan briefly for a different sort of combat, I guess. I covered the reconstruction efforts there. I did a three-part series. I was there for a month. And before that, I covered Camden, the poorest, most dangerous city in America.
You didn't want the Christie beat.
No, I was, you know, covering politics was something I wanted to do in college. But then I went to Afghanistan and I covered the soldiers on the ground and the experiences they were having and how it affected the people of Afghanistan. And I kind of lost interest in covering the corridors of power. And I felt like I really needed to cover the people. And I was convinced to start covering Christie. It's been 5 years.
And you were the first one to directly confront the governor with what came to become the Bridgegate scandal. You start the book with that, and then you sort of uncoil the story backwards.
I figured most readers would come to this having some awareness of Bridgegate, so I wanted to lay it out there in the beginning. This is going to be the story of the rise, the fall, and the attempted comeback of a politician. So I wanted to lay out that fall briefly at the start. And I also wanted to bring myself into it, too, to let you know there is so much concern about impartiality of journalists and the messenger. So I wanted to use a device, which would be the most famous moment I've had journalistically, which is asking this question that the sarcastic answer of which got replayed over and over and over again for many months.
I worked the cones, actually, on that. Unbeknownst to everybody, I was actually the guy out there. I was in overalls and a hat, so I wasn't, but I actually was the guy working the cones out there. You really are not serious.
This is before there was a smoking gun to know that the top people in his administration were, in fact, moving the traffic cones.
An early chapter in your book is called The Christie Mystique. What is it?
I think an editor named that chapter, but I'll go with it. There are pictures of me at press conferences when I've asked him, you know, a probing question. And his response to me would be construed as aggressive, maybe insulting. And yet, there are pictures of me where I am, like, laughing, like belly laughing. He has this way about him where there's a dickishness that is also concurrently endearing and charming.
Which I've experienced up until recently, calling the president a petulant child and a crybaby. He seems to have descended into utterly charmless name-calling. But there was a time when his pugnacity was actually kind of endearing, even if you didn't agree with his policies.
There are moments like, get the hell off the beach.
Get the hell off the beach in Asbury Park and get out. You're done. It's 4:30. You've maximized your tan. Get off the beach.
which is something that, you know, President Obama would never say. And that is, you know, endearing. But calling the President of the United States a petulant child, he would say regarding that, that, listen, it's a debate. I'm ratcheting up the rhetoric.
But be that as it may, you have also discussed on this show, and I wonder if you could review really quickly, his publicity machine. I mean, he has been a master at controlling at least television and more.
He actually has a guy on his staff that I found out in writing this book that is an expert in lighting. So when they've cut clips from his YouTube videos, they look really good and he looks really good. That's because there's a lighting expert in the room funded by taxpayers who is making him look this good. The packaging of Christie has been so effective in maximizing his popularity, in making him into a potential presidential candidate so quickly. They're a sophisticated machine from not only the staging of the town hall meetings that he's held throughout New Jersey and putting it in a theater in the round, but the support staff that gets there 5 hours before to hang big flags, and then the lighting expert and the cameras and the different angles, and then sending out specific clips immediately to a wide variety of people who are not just New Jersey, local New Jersey reporters, but, you know, talk radio hosts and cable news TV producers, to really expand his reach beyond anything that any local New Jersey politician had ever experienced before.
And these clips get picked up. They get played. He gets invited on these morning shows day after day, week after week. In terms of his demeanor, you offer a lot about his background, and he's a Newark boy through and through. His parents fought a lot. You suggest he played the role of peacemaker. Maybe this goes back to your point about contradictions, but it sounds like peacemaker and champion mud wrestler seem to coexist in the same person.
Yes. The other day, there was a dispute between the Speaker of the New Jersey Assembly and the President of the New Jersey Senate. They are both Democrats, and they had competing pieces of legislation about new casinos in North Jersey. And they've been, like, battling back and forth, and it's been, you know, in the press, and it's going on for weeks. And Christie's been off in New Hampshire and Iowa campaigning. And he had to come home because he had to give a State of the State speech. It was in the Constitution, so he had no choice. So he comes back to New Jersey. Right before he gives the State of the State speech, the day before, he holds a quick press conference that wasn't really a press conference because he didn't take questions. But he gave this little, you know, speech in his office to reporters assembled to say the dispute's been settled. I support the Senate President's bill, and the Assembly Speaker is going to go along with it, and thank you very much. He literally made peace with these guys, and it was a actual real-life display of leadership. I mean, you could argue the fact that maybe New Jersey shouldn't rely on more casinos in a state that where the casino industry is collapsing, and maybe this is not, you know, a good idea, but he did make peace. There was a guy in college who told me that he was able to look across a room and see who was going to fuck with him from a mile away. He has a very high EQ, emotional quotient. He's able to read people very well, which is something I think, you know, effective politicians can do.
And another contradiction, he has this great EQ, but he uses it for such petty purposes. I mean, talk about petulant. The whole Bridgegate scandal is reportedly based on political revenge. What good did it do him? What good could it have possibly done him?
He obviously would say nothing to do with that, but these were the top people in his administration.
Why don't you just go ahead and lay it out for anybody who doesn't remember Bridgegate?
Christie sought to get as many Democratic endorsements as he could for his reelection in 2013, and top officials in his office and at the Port Authority, which is a bi-state agency that he oversees, decided to close lanes to the George Washington Bridge, local lanes to the George Washington Bridge, the busiest bridge in the world, in order to cause a major traffic jam in this little town where the mayor, the Democratic mayor, would not endorse Christie.
Now, one of Christie's top aides, among the smoking guns, one of Christie's top aides said, time for traffic problems in Fort Lee.
Yes. And when the mayor of Fort Lee was calling Christie's office and various people in Christie's office to try to get answers and was screaming about a public safety emergency, I mean, there were ambulance drivers who had to get out of their vehicles and run to the scene of emergencies because there was so much traffic. And it didn't just happen one day. It went on for 5 days. And one of those days was September 11th, which is obviously a major day in this region. And George Washington Bridge is a past known terrorist target. There were delays in getting to a woman who had a heart attack. There were all kinds of little problems. There were people who were going to dialysis. I mean, there were a million little tragic stories that disseminated from this, and the mayor of Fort Lee desperately calling the governor's office and the governor's people, I need help, and they're blowing him off. And at one point, some Christie officials are joking about kids stuck on school buses, and they say, well, it's just children of Democratic voters, so we don't have to worry about that. And, you know, Christie says he had nothing to do with this. He got rid of the people involved, but the way he handled the aftermath is telling. There was a investigative report that was commissioned that he says exonerated him. The state has spent about $8 million in taxpayer funds on the lawyers who wrote this report. Turns out one of the main lawyers who got a lot of money from the taxpayers for this report is a good friend of Christie's, has vacationed with him. Her daughter's interned in his office. She just held a fundraiser for him, his presidential campaign, $2,700 a head. He hired an ethics ombudsman to clean up his office after this. The ethics ombudsman was also an ally of his, was supposed to issue periodic reports, didn't do any of that. So the federal investigation has its ongoing, and it has indicted two people. One person has pleaded guilty. The feds have not cited the governor for any guilt. But I think it's instructive to look at how he handled things in the aftermath to be able to judge what kind of leader he was in the face of such a major scandal.
I really enjoyed the early chapter where you talk about how Newark came to be and the immigrants that created that city and his own family roots. This is a leading question, but is there a bigger story here besides Christie, do you think?
This is instructive if you want to understand the making of an American presidential candidate and what it takes, essentially. The media manipulation, that is part and parcel of what is necessary, like it or not, within the system.
You suggest perhaps that in order to be a politician, you have to contain multitudes, even if there are some people within that multitude that you wouldn't want to meet in a dark alley.
That's right. That's right. And you must employ different kinds of people. The person who has pleaded guilty for closing the lanes of the George Washington Bridge, who is an official at the Port Authority, was a political blogger who was hired, it is now known, at the agency to spy on other employees, to figure out how to work certain politicians, who was hired to do what we would call political dark arts. And modern-day politicians need these tacticians who do things often on the public's dime that maybe aren't, you know, what we most would want from our public officials.
I think what you call dark arts back in Nixon's day were called dirty tricks.
Yes, but
they stay on this side of the law or not always? It depends where infraction takes place. If it's Newark, maybe not so much.
For sure. I mean, in New Jersey, the attorney general is appointed by the governor of New Jersey, the attorney general who would investigate state crimes. And in fact, Christie has not made any formal appointment of his attorney general. So it's an acting attorney general who's operating without the normal constitutional protections, who can just be fired on a whim. So, yeah.
When he was U.S. attorney, he was the first to use the Patriot Act to prosecute for terrorism?
I believe he was among the first. I don't know if he was exactly the first, mm-hmm. but yes.
On the stump, we've seen in several debates him talking about tirelessly tracking down terrorists.
I'm the only person on this stage who's actually filed applications under the Patriot Act, who have gone before the federal, the Foreign Intelligence Service Court, who has prosecuted and investigated and jailed terrorists in this country after September 11th.
And that's how we know that as president, he'll keep the country safe.
He has two major terrorism cases, both of which are controversial because they involve what critics say was entrapment. In both cases, they involve weapons and buying weapons that were supposed to be used for a terrorist attack. But in both cases, the weapons were rendered inoperable by the feds because they were provided by federal informants who were being paid by Americans.
So somebody approached these guys and said, want to buy some weapons? I mean, it was a sting?
They were both stings, yes. Mm-hmm. And in both cases, the feds had a reason to go in. In one case, these guys in South Jersey were shooting weapons and playing paintball in the Poconos. And they were filming it, and they brought their video to Circuit City to get turned into DVDs. This was in the early 2000s.
And was there any reason to suspect them of terrorism?
There were phrases like Allah Akbar, and there was Arabic being said on the tapes.
That's it?
There was a reason, I imagine, at the time, to at least look at these guys. And what they did was they hired an informant who became friends with them. And this guy would try to get him to talk about going after America and talk about terrorism. Mm-hmm. They watched some videos of radical clerics in the Middle East. The accusation was that they were going to attack Fort Dix, New Jersey. But if you listen to the tapes, it was often the informant who was driving the conversation, and he was the one who provided the weapons, and it was his idea. And it was a similar situation in the second case.
And Christie locked him up?
Yeah. There's appeals going on right now, actually. They just had a hearing a few weeks ago.
And that's what he's talking about on The Stump.
That's one of the cases he's talking about on The Stump. He is not unabashed about representing a point of view of Americans who want to go get them before they get us. Civil liberties can take a back seat.
You also suggest that he's seemingly unabashed about taking a point of view that is not really any longer representative of New Jerseyites.
Like the gun laws.
Yeah. Since he's been running, he hasn't even been in Jersey much.
No, he was out of state about 70% of 2015. And the night before he announced his candidacy in June, he issued a directive that would roll back New Jersey's gun laws and to look at whether they're really constitutional. These are gun laws that he had previously supported. He's vetoed bills to ban, for example, the 50 caliber rifle from New Jersey. This is even after he had proposed such a ban.
And citizens of New Jersey like stronger gun laws, right, according to polls?
That's right. And that's part of the reason why perhaps his approval ratings are down in the low 30s right now.
Let me conclude with this from the Daily News last weekend. In every sense, Katz has written the book on Christie, something that angry New Jerseyites can throw at their governor should he reappear in the state.
I found that lacked a little bit of the nuance and balance that I sought in the book. I tried to show him warts and all.
Matt, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brooke.
Matt Katz has covered Chris Christie for the past 5 years, now for WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio and WNYC Studios' weekly Christie Tracker podcast. You've been listening to an On the Media podcast extra. We have one of these for you almost every week. And you can be sure not to miss anything by subscribing to our newsletter at onthemedia.org. In fact, if you subscribe right now, you'll be entered to win a hat crocheted by me.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.